Hello, and welcome to the MPM Interconnections Podcast. I'm Andrew Burns, your host for this week's episode. And I'm joined today by Adam Kimura, CEO of Opal Fuels. Adam, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's an honor to have you, and I'm looking forward to diving into this discussion because I think your work at Opal Fuels and the things that you guys are doing there is a little bit off the beaten path for me, as I primarily cover, traditional renewables, solar, wind, a lot of storage. I'm based in Texas, so I do a lot of storage coverage as well. But we definitely are interested in the things that Opal Fuels is doing, and we've touched on them here and there, I think, in our reporting. But we want to get the listeners up to speed and everything. So would you tell me a little bit about your path in the industry, Adam, and how you got to where you are at Opal Fuels, and then we'll kind of get into it.
Yeah, happy to. And just point of clarification, I'm co-CEO of Opal Fuels. We have also Jonathan Moore, who's co-CEO alongside of me. I'll give a real brief background. My path and the path of Opal Fuels, really got its origins in landfill gas to electricity, renewable power from landfill gas or biogas or biomethane. And, we've got a 20, 25 year history in that market. And about 12 or 13 years ago, we really started thinking about whether or not there was a higher, better use of our landfill gas. And just to remind the listeners, we don't own landfills. We don't own dairies or farms. What Opal Fuels is primarily engaged in is the capturing of the methane or biomethane emissions that come off of those waste streams and converting it into a usable energy. Low carbon intensity, usable energy to replace fossil fuels. And, for about 20, 25 years, the industry was really taking that biogas or biomethane and turning it into renewable electricity. And about 12 or 13 years ago, we started thinking about whether or not there was something else we could do with those biomethane emissions and really started looking at transportation fuel here in the U.S. as a better answer, both in terms of the economics of what we could make or sell that renewable resource for, and also from an environmental impact, where if we could take that biomethane and replace diesel or other really heavy carbon intensive fossil fuels, we thought that was a really interesting business model. And what we did was at Opal Fuels was look at different go to market strategies on how to get that renewable natural gas into the transportation fuel market here in the U.S. And about 12 years ago, purchased a very small company that was building out fueling stations to use renewable natural gas as a transportation fuel, and branded that as TruStar Energy. And myself specifically for about 10 years or so before we merged a few entities into Opal Fuels, I was running what we call our downstream marketing and distribution business for renewable natural gas. And that means building fueling stations, servicing fueling stations, and converting heavy duty fleets from diesel over to RNG. And then about 3 years ago, at the end of 21, we put together three companies, which was the legacy business of landfill gas to electricity. We had also been embarking on a strategy to purchase a couple of RNG facilities and redevelop our landfill gas to electricity plants into RNG facilities. And what had been our downstream, RNG marketing and distribution platform that was TruStar, merged them all into Opal Fuels in 21. That's when I became co-CEO of Opal Fuels with John, as I had mentioned earlier, who had primarily been focused for 25 years on our landfill gas to electric portfolio and our nascent RNG business.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah, so there's a lot to dive into there. I'm really interested, I think, in sort of getting a good picture of kind of what not like a specific breakdown, but just like sort of like in terms of the company's focus between sort of what you're talking about with the RNG to electric versus the RNG in the transportation sector. Like, you mentioned the transition to the transportation sector took place over a decade ago. So at this point, is that like a pretty developed pipeline? Is that kind of like the main thrust of the business at this point? Or are you now seeing, maybe the industry catching up a little bit to where the electric RNG is also, its own kind of taking up a significant portion of your time?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And I think it also might make sense just to take a step back and really focus on what Opal does in sort of this energy transition space versus some of the other companies that you may have spent some more time on. And you know, really what Opal Fuels does is we are in the capture and conversion business of biomethane emissions into a low carbon intensity energy product. And that can either be RNG, which is really important to decarbonize, tough to decarbonize sectors such as heavy duty transportation and some other industrial processes. But there is also the ability to take that those methane emissions from these biological sources and turn them into renewable electricity. And there's a lot of attractive features for why that makes sense, where you know, landfill gas to electricity or wastewater to electricity or this other livestock waste to electricity is really an attractive renewable electricity source because it is baseload power. It's not intermittent,
Right.
depending on either wind or when the sun is shining. You also don't run into having to store the electricity for when you need it because it is baseload power. These facilities run 24/7, and you know, it just has a lot of which also helps out grid stability and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of
Right.
attractive features of it, and it's why the industry really grew up to be renewable electricity 20, 25 years ago. And you know, we're really agnostic. I mean, we have our views on why we think RNG is the best answer for these biomethane emissions. But we think renewable electricity from these methane emissions also makes a lot of sense, where, you know, a lot of these biogenic emissions are at smaller landfills, smaller wastewater treatment facilities owned by municipalities, don't have access to a pipeline, or smaller rural farms and that sort of thing. And they can't justify a full RNG investment. And we think it's really important to for us and the industry and public policy to embrace sort of this good, better, best strategy, where you know, the worst thing that we can do is not be capturing these methane emissions or biomethane emissions. I think it's now universally accepted that methane emissions are one of the most damaging greenhouse gases. You know, in the first 20 years, 80 times more potent for global warming than carbon dioxide. Over the life cycle of the gases, it's 28 times more harmful from you know, a global climate or heating perspective. And you know, it's really our philosophy that we should be doing all we can to capture all the biomethane emissions out there. And whether or not we turn it into renewable power or we turn it into renewable natural gas for heavy duty transportation or other industrial processes, we're sort of agnostic to it. And you know, I think it's really important to note that you know, the methane emissions that are emitted in the US, the number one source of methane emissions comes from the oil and gas industry, just traditional, you know, fossil drilling for oil and gas, where you have a lot of methane emissions from that drilling and gathering process. And then when that gas is on the pipelines, there's also the potential for methane leakage from the pipelines. And thus far, we've seen a really large focus, rightfully so, from the administration coming out of COP28 that we should be doing more from a methane monitoring and methane capture and really making sure that the oil and gas industry is doing everything that they can do to make sure that we don't have methane emissions from their business activities. But it's really you know, the next three biggest sources of methane emissions in the US really come from these biogenic sources, whether it's landfills, waste decaying and decomposing in landfills. It comes from livestock waste, or it comes from wastewater, which is basically human waste. And you know, that's really the area that we're focused on, where it's not introducing any new carbon into the atmosphere. We're basically reusing and recycling waste that is in place. This is really a waste in place issue, where it is happening, and this you know, these waste products are decaying and creating these biomethane emissions. And that's really what we're primarily focused on.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it's an interesting concept because And I can see how, like, 12 years ago, right, whenever you guys were making that transition to the transportation sector, that would have made a lot of sense because, as you mentioned, you know, those are sectors, that's, you know, one of the sectors that's, like, really tough to decarbonize, right? And it's gonna re you know, require, like, you know, something that is really powerful, like base load level like this. But then, like, when you go into the energy sector now, because we've seen so much adoption of, like, these you know, traditional renewables, wind and solar. Now there seems to be, like, this appetite that we're seeing, you know, whether it's directed towards storage or whether it's directed toward things like this, like, you know, renewable natural gas to power. This it seems like that would be something that they would be, you know, knocking on your door a lot more about, right? Like, that's now versus then. So is that something that's taken place? Are you seeing a lot of interest from, you know, potential off-takers, you know, maybe even policy leaders or groups across the country? Like, what's been the reaction, especially as you guys have kind of, you know, merged to relaunch as Opal Fuels in 2021.
Yeah, no, yes. And we talk a lot about tailwinds in our sector, and I'll touch upon them from different places, whether they be corporate initiatives or public policy initiatives. But we're really starting to get some positive feedback, even from environmental groups, where everybody understands we have a waste in place issue, and we need to be doing something about these biomethane emissions. And you know, thankfully, this industry also has proven technology. You know, we operate at scale, and we've got you know, really good technologies to utilize the fuel or the electricity once we produce it. And we really do believe we're starting to get what feels to be more bipartisan support for this industry. And you know, when you look across the you know, we you know work with some other advocacy groups or what have you. And you know, more than 70% of Americans do believe that we should be doing something about climate change. And when you break it down by political you know, political leanings or political philosophies, you know, you have, you know, Democrats where you're somewhere in the low 90% range where, you know, Democrats believe we should be doing something. And then when you go to independents, it's somewhere in the low to mid 70s that we should be doing something about climate change. And when you go on to the Republican side of things, maybe it's in the mid to high 30s, 35 to 40%. What's really interesting is when you go down age brackets and age groups every 10 or 15 years or so, those percentages jump by
Sure.
10, 15%. So when you actually do a polling of even folks that identify as Republicans that are in their 40s, you're in the 50, 60% range of what folks think, you know, that we should be doing something. And you know, this industry that we participate in, you know, is something that a lot of folks can gravitate behind. And you know, if you look at base Republican candidates, you know, again, about 70% of those think we should be doing something on climate change. They just don't necessarily have the bullet points and the talking points about what we should be doing. And you know, the public policies that support what we're doing, some of them are actually existing in place, and we just need, you know, the different government branches to align in their thinking and follow through on the policies that are already on the books. And we can talk about some renewable electricity policies and some other things, but it really does feel like it's resonating, and we are starting to see some bipartisan support for a lot of these policies, whether they're specific elements in the IRA or what we should be doing to support the renewable fuel standard. And we're optimistic that this is becoming a bipartisan issue for folks, and think that it will continue to see it be a priority for the folks in the, you know, both in DC and at the state level. And as it pertains to organizations or corporations, we are seeing a lot more interest coming from corporations that maybe have their specific climate goals. And you know, the SEC has just put out some guidelines that corporations are going to have to start disclosing in their 10-Ks and annual reports what their Scope 1 emissions are and what their Scope 2 emissions are. And when you use renewable natural gas as a transportation fuel, you record zero Scope 1 and zero Scope 2 emissions. So it's a really powerful product for them. And we're seeing a lot of utilities that want to use more renewable natural gas across their systems, industrial buyers, voluntary buyers, where they're getting very interested in purchasing the product for the carbon and the sustainability benefits. And we're also seeing all sorts of new markets and markets showing up, whether they be in Europe or Asia. where folks are recognizing, the benefits for, sort of the low carbon intensity energy that we're producing. So we at Opal Fuels, we still the highest best value for our product is still in the U.S. transportation fuel market because of the Renewable Fuel Standard. And by the way, it's a really powerful product because then you're taking diesel off the road. So not only are we eliminating those biomethane emissions at the source, we're using it to replace diesel, which is one of the most dirtiest carbon intensity, what however you want to phrase it,
Totally.
fuels that we're using the RNG to replace. And fleets are starting to recognize that as well. So it really does feel like a very exciting time, not only for our industry, but Opal Fuels and the way we're set up, to deliver the product into transportation. And we do see increasing interest coming, both from public policymakers to make sure that we're doing all we can to capture biomethane, and from end user customers that want to use it. The renewable electricity market, still needs some development of the offtake markets, whether they be through public policies at the federal level or state level. But we're optimistic that we're going to start to see some movement in that as well to really jumpstart development activity to start building more of these biomethane electricity plants.
Yeah, I am curious about the sort of this is geography piece of that, just in terms of your development of those plants. Are they, it seems like they would be sort of more focused in areas, obviously with, farms or landfills or and things of that nature. So are you finding that there are specific areas that are like kind of like hotspots for you where you for you to go for development, or are you, finding a pretty broad spectrum across the United States where you guys are able to develop these things?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a two-part answer between our upstream development opportunities where we're building new either renewable natural gas facilities or renewable electricity facilities. Those are across the country, and we're finding opportunities all over the place for both landfills or livestock waste or wastewater. We're actually excited about food waste as another potential area of growth for us. Where you can digest food waste and turn it into renewable natural gas end product. So those opportunities are really across the country, and we've got a large portfolio of projects that were either in construction, in our development pipeline, or new prospective opportunities, and they really are broad-based across the country. On the development fleet side of things, where we're building fueling stations and converting fleets. We have seen, increased interest, or it is better for us to build those stations where you can also get state level credits, which are low carbon fuel standard credits, specifically in California,
Sure.
in Washington, excuse me, in Oregon. Washington has a program. New Mexico just a month ago voted to put a new LCFS program in place. It takes a couple of years to get those things up and running, but we're seeing more and more states adopt those as well. And those could be, potentially more attractive markets for us to build fueling stations and convert fleets. But I would say we are seeing activity all over the country building out fueling stations and converting fleets. And there's a new engine coming out from Cummins, a 15-liter engine, which we think is going to open up and expand the market into all sorts of trucking and logistics fleets. And those test programs have been going well. So broad-based opportunity across the country in terms of producing the renewable fuels, whether it's RNG or electricity. And from the fleet perspective as well, we're seeing good opportunities across the country. There are, pockets that may be growing a little bit faster if there's some of those state level incentives available as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, really interesting. And you mentioned earlier, one of your previous answers talking about like a little bit about provisions in the IRA. Was there anything in there that is like, I mean, we cover the IRA all the time, right? With wind and solar on storage, obviously. But was there anything in there in terms of, RNG or whether that's in the power market or in transportation that you guys are finding useful?
Yeah, there were two pieces to it that primarily related to Opal. Well, two that are front and center, and then we'll see what happens with renewable hydrogen and that sort of thing, and whether or not that can be an offtake market for RNG as well. But the two ones that we were primarily focused on was first the investment tax credit provision, there, Section 48, and whether or not renewable natural gas property would qualify as those tax credits. There was some confusing guidance that came out in November. Which the definition didn't quite make sense to us or the industry or the intent of the IRA to incentivize these projects being built. There was a correction issued, gosh, back in February, where they said, yes, we did want to make sure that biogas conditioning property or RNG facilities would qualify. There are still some technical corrections on how they dealt with common ownership, and I don't need to get too far into the weeds between who owns the collection system at the landfill, who owns the biogas property, and some other, ownership rules, which people submitted their final comments today, which Opal did as well with some few folks in the industry alongside of us. It's pretty clear that the intent of the IRA was to support investments in these products, excuse me, in these projects. We're cautiously optimistic that that will get fixed in this final rulemaking. But that was a really key critical one for us. The second was there are something called production tax credits or 45Z, which if you take a low carbon intensity fuel such as what we do from landfills or dairies or wastewater or food and turn it and then turn it into a transportation fuel, there could be production tax credits from 2025 through 2027. We're still waiting on how Treasury is going to score the carbon intensity of the various fuels. So we don't know exactly yet what the math is going to be for those production tax credits. But those will be important as well to support us and others in the industry. And interestingly, in this IRA, both of those tax credits can now be saleable and monetized, which is really important. So we do expect once we're generating these tax credits, whether they be the ITC in that 48 provision or the 45Z, that Opal will be able to sell those and turn those into capital and recycle that capital into, investing in more projects.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that obviously, I think it's been really interesting for us just seeing people kind of grapple with the transferability of the tax credits and like really certain kind of figuring out how, big a deal it's going to be for their just for the, their financing and their pipeline. And obviously for companies like Opal Fuels, it seems like particularly salient. So that should be very interesting to see develop. While we're kind of on the financing train here, I saw that Opal recently closed like a 500 million credit facility. Do you want to talk about that and whether the origination of that, if you want to go into it, but mostly like how that's going to be put to work in the development of your pipeline?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We were happy to get that put into place in September of last year. It has been a challenging financing market for a lot of folks that either are in this space and maybe haven't yet proven out the revenue model and that sort of thing. I thought it was a tremendous vote of confidence, both in terms of Opal Fuels business strategy, business model, and that sort of thing. So we closed on the $500 million credit facility, and that takes us a long way to continue to build new projects and build out our production of renewable natural gas and also build and own more fueling stations. But we currently have eight RNG facilities that are in production. And we currently have, I believe it is, six RNG facilities in construction. We also have one renewable power facility that we also have in construction. And the capital that we've raised from that facility are more than enough to pay for all the projects that we currently have in construction. And then we have a large pipeline of projects as well behind that $500 million will go to developing as well. And really the nice thing about this business and this business model is once we build these facilities, they require minimal CapEx. This is not an industry that has to drill every year for its resource like a traditional E&P company. After we build these facilities and specifically in landfills, We have all these microbes, small little bugs that are decomposing and creating our energy source for us. And really, all you're doing is, and by the way, I'm simplifying this. There is a lot of special sauce to how you design the well fields and the gas collection and manage the gas collection system. But after you build these facilities, we basically have 90 to 95, 90% free cash flow conversion from our EBITDA and don't have to continue to spend CapEx for our production. We look at that financing and any of the other additional capital raised that we may or may not do in the future, as it's really, really just construction financing to build the facilities. And after you build them, you're generating a tremendous amount of free cash flow. And so it's really more or less financing to build out the plants and that sort of thing. And from the free cash flow generation, you de-lever pretty quickly if you're not finding more attractive projects, which, by the way, I think we will find.
Sure. Yeah, well, that's great to hear. It's interesting that you mentioned that it's been a little bit of a challenging landscape for getting financing for people in the space. And I wonder if that comes and maybe you could speak to this. I wonder if that comes a little just from, we've seen that there's obviously like trepidation about like investing in like traditional thermal projects for sure. And like boilerplate natural gas, that sort of thing. That's definitely been a big talking point down in Texas for sure. So are you finding that maybe some of that is just kind of carrying over just on the sense of, people just aren't really clear about, the differences, or is it just a matter of like proving out your business model, or what do you think is leading to some of the hesitancy, maybe that you're seeing from some investors?
Yeah, so two different pieces to that. One is, our business specifically, we're not seeing trepidation, and I think that credit facility was one example of it. And I think in capital providers' minds, most of them are differentiating between businesses that are on the come and businesses that are sort of proven out, and management teams that are
Sure.
proven out and that sort of thing. So that was more of a broader comment on what you're seeing out there in energy transition, companies that are still pre-revenue, still trying to prove out their technology, that sort of thing. As far as sort of the public markets or how the stock markets or investors are perceiving, sort of the industry and Opal, it's really a good question, because we've seen really strong private market transactions, strategic transactions in our space, where it still is a very active M&A market. And there seems to be a little bit of a dislocation between what's happening out there in the public stock markets versus where we're still seeing a lot of valuations and that sort of thing. And I don't know. I've got a number of different opinions on it, but maybe that's a podcast for you and some of the other sell side analysts and that sort of thing, or other investors in stocks into why the sentiment seems to be a little bit of a drag
Sure.
on Opal and some of our other peers.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. I think, just for me, obviously, like just getting to know more about the industry, just the RNG industry in general is very interesting, and probably not as well developed in terms of the natural perception of it. So, I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it's definitely been great to sort of dive into some of these topics with you here for sure, because it's certainly a very interesting thing for me to hear about, especially when I think about it on the electric side, just because with thermal RNG for transportation, that seems like a no-brainer, right? Like in terms of like transitioning from diesel, things like that. Like that, the benefits are obvious. But especially I'm just seeing a lot. I can tell you, like in the industry as I cover it, that we are just seeing a lot of interest in how as these pipelines and these portfolios like get really high on renewable energy from solar and wind. Like there's so much interest now in storage to firm it up, and for like alternatives, right? that are not that don't deal with that intermission. So, seeing what you guys are able to produce at Opal Fuels, it just seems like a no-brainer. I cannot imagine that you're not going to be seeing like exponentially more interest as more and more of these companies and utilities you mentioned earlier kind of get to that point where they need to supplement with some of these other, options, right?
Absolutely. And I do believe that that will be coming, where people are going to get more interested and excited about taking, smaller, if you can't turn it full into RNG because of the size of the resource or proximity to the pipeline, I think you're going to start to see a lot more interest and support for renewable electricity from these biomethane sources. I'll just say on a quick tangent, the reason why I was talking about this good, better, best strategy, the worst thing we can do is nothing to capture these biomethane emissions from smaller landfills that are owned by municipalities or wastewater treatment plants owned by municipalities or all these other smaller, livestock farms and that sort of thing. The better answer is to turn it into renewable power. And that's better for a local air quality and emission standpoint. It could also generate incremental value for municipalities and rural communities and a lot of these places that are actually in Republican states and the ag community and that sort of thing.
Sure.
The issue with on-site electricity generation from these biomethane sources is that you're doing it on a small scale, and those aren't the most efficient energy, electricity plants, where it could take you 10 or 11,000 MMBTUs to create your megawatt of power. Really the best answer is if you have a large enough facility from a local air quality perspective to turn it into RNG, where you're really limiting local emissions and that sort of thing, and then routing that RNG to an efficient combined cycle plant that only uses 6,300 MMBTU to make your megawatt. So you could be making, anywhere from, 60 to 90% more renewable electricity, displacing that much more fossil fuels by having an RNG plant and then routing the gas to an efficient combined cycle. So both make sense. And where you can, we really believe the best answer is to turn it into RNG. But we should also, no doubt, be doing all renewable electricity that we can as well.
Well, as we kind of wrap things up here, you've touched on it a little bit just as you talked about the credit facility, and obviously we've gotten a pretty good idea of where things are going for the industry and for the things that you guys are working on. But do you just want to kind of boil it down for us and just say, give us an overview of maybe what we can expect to see from Opal Fuels just maybe the next 12 to 18 months, like what your outlook is?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, because we probably didn't spend as much time on Opal Fuels specifically, but Opal Fuels is a little bit unique in the industry from a number of different perspectives. One is we're executing on a pipeline that's visible, where we've got production facilities that have come online last year, new facilities that are coming on this year, and always announcing new RNG projects or renewable power projects. And over the next 12 to 18 months, we've got, sort of fastest growth in the industry, where we're going to exit this year with, nameplate capacity of 8.8 million MMBTUs. And, we've got new projects that we'll be announcing going into construction. And we have a pipeline of, either converting existing landfill gas to electric projects from our existing portfolio or other new greenfield opportunities. And so we're really excited about the growth that we're going to be showing here over the next 12 to 18 months, and the growth, quite frankly, that we have been showing. And we're unique also because we're vertically integrated. What that means is, we sort of set ourselves up to own, like have control over the molecule all the way from the time it exits the landfill, goes through our facilities, to a whole fueling dispensing network that we're building, owning, and operating. And we're building about, I don't know, 30 or 40% of all the new fueling stations in the US. And, our largest customer is UPS. We've built 50 sites for them. We have service techs across the country. And we are able to deliver RNG to our fleet customers from our portfolio of projects. It's unique, where you don't have folks in the industry that are really vertically integrated like we are. There are some folks that are trying to replicate it now. Historically, you've had folks that are either focused on the upstream production or on the downstream fueling network. And by being vertically integrated, not only do we capture the full value of the molecule, but it really puts you in a strong competitive position, when marketing to fleets that want this fuel, that they know they're going to be dealing with one counterparty that can, sort of guarantee its supply all the way through to the stations that we own and operate, where they've got, trust in somebody that's actually deployed this, fuel, for fleets like UPS across the country. And So we really do feel like we've got a great team in place to execute on this, and are really excited about the potential for this increased adoption of this fuel for those diesel users on the Class 8 side. So, I think over the next 12 to 18 months, you're going to see more projects coming online, more projects going into construction, and some more fleet conversions from these really large logistic fleets that are looking for an answer on, how to achieve their sustainability goals. And by the way, the way the industry is set up, these fleets are not paying a premium for this RNG versus diesel. They're actually saving money. It's really a fascinating spot where we've got a green discount product for these fleets. So we're sort of excited on both sides, and we're also hopeful through education and in DC with public policymakers. You should hopefully start to see some broader based bipartisan support, whether it be for renewable electricity or some of these other kind of sectors of the market that we're participating in.
Well, obviously, it's a very exciting period for the industry as a whole, and then obviously for you and the work that you guys are doing at Opal Fuels. So, thank you for walking us through it. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and we'll definitely stay in touch as you guys continue to work through this pipeline, because I think there's definitely some big things ahead, obviously on the transportation side, but I suspect also on the electricity side as well.
Great, I appreciate it. It's been fun talking to you.
Awesome. Well, thanks again.